I'm going to go over a couple of quick housekeeping mentions before we get started. If you're having any trouble at all viewing the webinar once we get started, let me know by typing in the questions box on the control panel. Can everybody see the questions box to the right? We'll have plenty of time at the close of the webinar for your questions. Be sure that you use the questions box for your questions. We're actually not going to open it to, looks like Bonnie's got a question. Let's see. For some reason, I'm not able to access. Today's guest presenter is Tom Ahern, one of North America's leading authorities on donor communications. Every year, he delivers tons of workshops on the techniques of effective fundraising communications. He's the author of four well-received books on donor newsletters, How to Write Fundraising Materials That Make More Money, Keep Your Donors, a book about donor retention methods co-authored with his wife, and Seeing Through a Donor's Eyes. Tom works with dozens of clients nationwide every year. They include names like Save the Children, as well as hospitals, universities, foundations, and local charities. He specializes in bequest marketing, donor communications, evaluations, direct mail, newsletter interventions, and case statements for big ticket campaigns. We're honored to have Tom with us today. Welcome, Tom. Take it away.
Thanks, Pam, and welcome to the rest of you. Forgive us, we are at the kind of the rough edge of the donor frontier here, I mean the digital frontier, and we are stumbling around. But what you're going to look at today is kind of a deep immersion into the things that actually make a difference in terms of having a successful donor newsletter versus the other kind, which does not bring in much money and does not retain many donors. Let's look at the first thing that's important to yeah, there it is. No, there we went right by it. As I say, we're going to be stumbling through this a little bit. The reason you have a donor newsletter is because it is your basic retention tool. As you can see from the screen, we have some research from Adrian Sargent, who is the fundraising industry's number one scientific researcher. And he found and published this data last year that 8 out of 10 first-time donors, people who give, you know, take the leap, the leap of trust, and give you that first gift, hoping that perhaps this will turn into a wonderful relationship, 8 out of 10 of those people do not make a second gift. So between that first solicitation and the second solicitation, something bad is happening. And one of the chief, you know, suspects here is the newsletter, because the newsletter is your primary way to report back to donors. What you're looking at on the screen now is the purpose of a donor newsletter. The first job, the big job, the number one job, is for that newsletter to grab those people and hug them tight in a love hug, and thereby retain them to, you know, from one gift to the next, from that first gift, which is very tentative, that's a first date gift, to the second gift, which is actually far more indicative of their likelihood to stick with you. And then they're on, and then finally, over time, for instance, inform them about things like bequest giving as they become more and more part of your family. Job number two is to make money. Now, what I see, because I review hundreds of donor newsletters, is that many times charities get these two jobs backwards, and they use the donor newsletter as a type of kind of a stealth appeal, and they're always asking for more money in it, Now, you do ask for more money in a donor newsletter, but it is not the primary reason why it exists. And if you get these two jobs backwards, you will not have a successful donor newsletter. If you do get it right, here is the promise. This is what is available to organizations that do good donor newsletters. And incidentally, in the course of this show, we are going to look at some very successful donor newsletters, and you'll see what makes the difference. If you do it right and you get a 10% improvement in your donor retention, that translates into a 50% improvement in revenue immediately, and that is the beginning of a relationship that is going to become more and more prosperous as time goes by. Now again, this is not pulled out of thin air. This is Adrian Sargent's research put in front of you. So this is the goal. This is why we bother doing it. What you're seeing here is the Merkle domain formula. Now, Merkle bought out domain, so they really don't get any credit for this. Domain was a top national fundraising house in Seattle, and in the late 1990s, they started experimenting with newsletters to see what worked best, what was, first of all, the least expensive format that produced the most revenue. And after extensive testing, they came out with this formula that you see. And it's a very simple formula. You just want to have a four-page newsletter. It can be one color. It can be full color. One of the key elements is that it is not a self-mailer. Now, I probably see, 90%, maybe more, of the newsletters that come to me for review are self-mailers. And the thinking on the inside is, well, it'll save us cash because we don't have to print envelopes. It will save you cash on the production end, but it will definitely put a dent in your income on that side of the ledger, because what the domain people found was that if you put it in a number 10 envelope, it increased the perceived value of the newsletter. On the outside of the envelope, it says something like your newsletter enclosed, and it can be much more special than that. And when you do it this way and you send it to current donors, you include the reply device. You also put in a lot of little reminders that they can also give online if they can. And when you devote your newsletter, look at the last bullet, when you devote your newsletter to what Domain calls accomplishment reporting, which I'll explain, then you can see some amazing jumps in revenue, and we're going to examine one of those. What you're looking at on screen right now is a typical donor communications calendar for a full-fledged donor communications program, let's say at a hospital or some larger institution that has enough staff to be able to get this out the door. I bring it to your attention because there are a couple of things here that are worth noting. First of all, you have a couple of acquisition mailings during the year. That's to bring in new people. You have a four-time print newsletter, and that's kind of the minimum. Maybe you could go to three, but if you go any less than that, I mean, a one-time newsletter in a year is actually an annual report. So, you know, it starts to lose news value, and it also starts to lose the thing that you're trying to do, which is to have continuity to the contact. You want to be in front of people all the time. You'll see here they have six renewals. Now, this brings gasps from smaller organizations. And also people, you know, they intuitively think, isn't that over-soliciting? Well, no, it isn't. The problem is that if you don't know when people are ready to give necessarily. Yeah, a lot of people give at the year-end appeal, but they might give at other times of the year too. And if you don't go and ask for that money, you simply will not get it. So the truth is, and this all fundraisers, you know, recognize, realize, and learn as they become more and more experienced, is that you really cannot over-solicit. Yes, if people complain, you should answer those complaints, but that's not necessarily a bad sign. That may be a sign that you're finally getting enough appeals out the door. On the far right, though, is a very important column, the e-newsletter. Notice there's one a month, and that's because e-newsletters are relatively simple to get out. You can write one in an hour or two. It needs to be very brief. It shouldn't be long, and so it isn't a huge writing chore. It puts a lot of value on collecting email addresses, so you want to do that all the time. Okay, there's the context for where newsletters are in a standard communications calendar. The question of, can we just stop doing these awful paper newsletters and switch entirely to e-newsletters, is simple to answer. The answer is no. Because they're not equivalents. That's the real problem. And you can also see here some science, which was reported just this month, I think, on what the reaction is on the receiving end to paper versus electrons. It turns out neuroscience has watched the brain work, and when you're reviewing information on paper, it produces more processing in the emotional part of your brain. When you're looking at things on screen, the processing happens in a different part of your brain, which is not so emotional. And that is unfortunate because all giving decisions, in fact all decisions of any kind, begin with an emotional urge. And if you want to maximize giving, you want to stay in the emotional realm rather than go wandering off into the reasonable. So for this piece of neuroscience alone, you would say, okay, we have to have both. And that actually is the answer. You need a paper and you need an electronic. The virtues of the electronic newsletter are that you can get one out very quickly every month, so you're staying in touch. The virtues of the paper is it's a different reading experience and it stimulates the emotions more successfully, we now know. Donors like newsletters that are well done because they're like having a good guest come over to the house, tell you some interesting anecdotes, entertain you. The visual aspects of your newsletter are as important as the verbal, sometimes more important. And they're not, you know, pressing for money. They really can't press for money. They're there to inform about what you did with the donor's past gifts. That's what the accomplishment reporting is. Why don't your donors like your newsletters? Why do most donors throw most newsletters away as soon as they receive them, as Jerry Panis found in his research? Because they're terrible and they're boring and they are trying to be risk averse rather than entertaining. I mean, it's an entertainment medium as a magazine and a newspaper is. It is called a newsletter because you're bringing news. Most charities fail to present anything that is not predictable, and therefore they get treated as, you know, this boring old codger that shows up every few months and says nothing worth hearing. Okay, let's jump into the mechanics of the newsletter. The first thing to understand is that your front page is your most important real estate. It is the first impression part of your newsletter. It is what they will look at first. And so you have to make sure that what is there on the front page is the right stuff. Because if you don't get it right, what you have is a house without a front door. The front page is your welcome. And I should look at your front page as a donor and go, oh, I love you people. Thank you for coming to my house. Okay, let's look at a front page of what I would say is a fairly typical donor newsletter. This is produced by a hospital down in Florida, and they sent it to me for my critique. And what you're looking at is a failed newsletter. Because what they said to me was, while people tell them, oh, I like it, I love it, I saw my picture in it, wasn't that great, nobody sends any checks in. So they're not advancing their mission in terms of creating more revenue for their wonderful programs at this spectacular hospital. They're just getting nice pats on the back, and it's not doing the second half of its job. In fact, it's not actually doing the first half of its job, which is to report on accomplishments. So let's now analyze this front page, see what actually is going on there. The first thing I want to introduce you to is the concept of eye motion studies, and where does your eye go on a printed page? The short answer is it goes to the biggest graphics first. We know the seminal eye motion studies were done in Germany in the 1980s, and they confirmed what was probably pretty obvious, which is the largest piece of ink on the page is going to be almost impossible not to look at. Your eye just travels instantly to it. And so on this page, that would be what's called the masthead, which is the name of the newsletter, the Chronicle. And then the second big thing, partially because it's beneath a big black bar of ink, is the headline. And that's on purpose. Headlines are bigger because they're meant to attract the eye by having a lot of ink. Now, the third thing your eye is going to go to and get totally lost in are all these photos you see wrapping around and filling the bottom and providing all this ballast, visual ballast, to the page. Okay, I just want to quickly introduce you to the concept of eye motion studies. It's very important. You can actually predetermine what people will look at by how much ink you assign to that message or, you know, that picture or whatever. Now let's look at a kind of a teardown of what is on that front page and why some of these things are not functioning the way they should be. First of all, the headline focuses on a big number, what I'll call a trophy number. You know, oh, it's $270,000. Well, there are a couple of problems with that. One is, in the context of a hospital, is this a lot of money, or maybe it's not very much money at all? I mean, how much does $270,000 in the context of a hospital actually buy? And that's only part of the problem. The other part is you don't know if that is maybe saying to people, we don't need any more money. And I call these case-closed headlines, as you can see from the second bullet here. They are reporting not on an accomplishment, which is the number one goal of your newsletter. They are reporting on an event and the sum total of the money raised at that event, but that money itself is not an accomplishment. It hasn't been translated into anything. We don't know whether $270,000 will heal a lot of kids or very few kids, or how it's going to be spent at all. So it doesn't fulfill that first requirement of being an accomplishment. The other thing is this, and this is fairly typical of these newsletters, they look backwards. You know, this event has already happened, and yet it's on the front page. That means I'm looking in the rear view mirror. The newsletter should be looking forward. It should have vision. It should be saying, this is where we want to go next, and with your help, we can get there. This is basically saying, relax, we raised a ton of money, and you don't have to do anything else until we, you know, send you another appeal. And I believe that is probably why this newsletter is not raising money, is that it really, you know, it's just celebrating a party. You have other problems. As I mentioned, all these photos here, basically, you cannot not look at them, so your eye is stuck in them, and they're not giving you anything. It's just a bunch of smiling faces. The only person who really matters on this page is the little kid, and that's Maggie, and she has a very bad, you know, disease that this hospital is working hard and is successfully dealing with. But on the actual printed page, her eye is the size of a little raisin. And you can't, you know, stare at Maggie. You can't love Maggie. You can't fall in love with her because you can't really even see her eyes. And that means there's very low empathy on this page. It's a bunch of smiling adults having a ball. And I happened to be in front of a big audience yesterday showing this slide, and I, you know, asked them as a kind of case, well, what does this say to you when you're looking at this? And they pretty much all agreed, oh, they're having a great party. That is not the message that you want to be your primary message for your donor newsletter. It is a very minor message that can be in there, but should be consigned to an interior page where it has less perceived value. Your front page matters. It is not a place to celebrate some old event, and everybody looks like they had a great time, and we raised a bunch of money, but who cares? And why does it matter? This is just not going to get you any place you need to go. Okay, let's look at a before and after, a makeover of a fairly successful newsletter. It was doing okay, but they did a graphic makeover and improved results, and now they're getting a return on investment of 2.5 times. So if they spend $10,000 on this in printing and costs for the writing, because I know this happens to be professionally written, and the postage, those things are your overhead, cost of goods. Well, they still get back $25,000, so they net $15,000 from every mailing, which is worth going for. And you can see I put in some numbers for you, so you get a sense of, you know, what their mailing size is like and what the number of gifts are that came in. They mail 5,400, they get 134 gifts. And those 134 gifts, though, translate into $25,000 worth of charitable income. So, you know, very much worth going for. Let's look at what they changed so you can get a sense of what might matter. First of all, it used to be a two-color publication, and it was kind of grim colors. It was this purple and black, and both of those are dark colors. And so the new designer has added a third color, which is this kind of creamy, orangey, yellowy color. It's a warm color, and you can use it in tints in various ways to stand behind, as you can see, the bottom article there. To make the type pop a little bit more. The masthead has been cleaned up. It was kind of quirky with some weird type. Now, one of the things you're always trying to say to your donors is, we are a professional operation here, because frankly, the research shows that they believe exactly the opposite, that most nonprofits are kind of flaky, and they, you know, we're in an industry which calls itself the nonprofit industry, and so the connotations are we really don't like money, or we don't, you know, we're not serious about it or something. And anyway, all research shows that donors are quite skeptical of the business-mindedness of nonprofits, so this makes them look business like. There's a table of contents across the top which teases the articles that are on the inside, and one of those teaser messages is a very important one, and that's the one on the far right where it says how to double your donation. That is what's known as an offer. Offers are like this, matching gift offers, are very powerful motivators. They bring people out of the woodwork to give you money. And you can see the bottom, the last bullet here, the talking about this matching gift offer, which then was repeated in an appeal that went out as sort of a companion piece, I think a couple of weeks later. They got a record response. It's because of the matching offer that that happens. It gets people past their inertia. A lot of times you don't get a gift from somebody just because they didn't bother. It isn't that they hate you. It isn't that they've consciously said, oh, I don't want to give these people this time. They really just ignore you. And so when you put a matching gift offer in front of them, it tends to increase response, very reliably so. Another thing that's good about the remake here is they've got on the front cover, they now have two stories instead of one big long story. So there are two more entry points for people that may hook their interest. And they're done very well because they focus on the skimming level. The truth is, and I'll show you some research a little bit later, most people do not read long articles. They simply do not penetrate past the first sentence or the first paragraph. So if you hope to persuade them to like you, to believe in you, and all the rest of it, you have to do that at the skimming level, the headlines, what is called a deck, what a civilian would call a subhead, that's what journalists call a deck. And that would be, for instance, here on the top story, the deck is, Liam's story is one every parent fears, blah, 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 blah. That's the deck. The headline is, that was when I was young and innocent. And all of these things, you know, the personal side of these stories is what draws people in. The fact, even though this is really a lousy, quote-unquote, photo on the front cover, it's a badly taken snapshot, the screen has glare on it, so you can't see what's there, and so forth. The reason why that still has impact is because that is Liam. And now his head is turned away from you because Liam is a recovering addict, and so privacy issues. But the authenticity of this is what helps sell the donor on this. And you have quotes here that are very consciously written to thank the donors. It says, I wouldn't be here now in this little purple box in the middle if it wasn't for Merchants Quay, Ireland. I'm very grateful for people who have helped out. Thank you. And that's the thing the donor needs to hear over and over on every page is thank you for being a supporter. You are making this difference. Now you notice at the very bottom here too, let me point one more thing out. Merchants Quay uses your donations wisely. See how. That is there on purpose. That wasn't just randomly selected. It is there to turn off the skeptic that is in all of us. If the native response to charities is, well, you know, I like what you're doing, but I really, in my heart of hearts, don't expect you to be doing it very well. You need to counter that negative opinion all the time because it will undermine people giving to you. And we know from research, and this is neuroscience again, that if you tell people you can trust us, even though you might say, oh, well, nobody believes that, the truth is they do believe it. And so you say it here, as they did at Merchants Quay, we use your donations wisely. All right, going on. This is the poster child of what you can do if you change a few things consciously in a newsletter. What you're looking at is the homepage for a newsletter, Gillette Children's Hospital, which I believe is out in Minneapolis, thereabouts. And they would send this out, and on average to their donor base, on average they would get $5,000 back in gifts in the envelopes that were included with the newsletter. Then they changed a bunch of things, and I'm going to show you what they changed, and suddenly their giving jumped 1,000% between one issue and the next, and now they're getting $50,000 back in the little envelopes and online giving every time they send this thing out. What did they do that made such a huge difference? We're going to examine that. Well, the first thing they did is they cut it in half. So they followed the domain formula. They went from what they had been doing, which was 8 pages with long articles. They both cut the size of the length of the newsletter in half to 4 pages, and they cut the length of the articles down, knowing that nobody was really reading them, to 500 or less, so that now they're kind of more capsule articles. Also, they focused on the skimming level, the headlines, the captions, all the bigger, bolder, briefer things on the page that your eye involuntarily, automatically goes to look at, and that's where the real messaging happens. Also, bottom point, they went from being an impersonal, institutional voice to being a very personal voice where they use the word you all the time. So you now are looking again at the successful front page. I've broken down the elements of it. A lot of times when you're telling stories, and you need to be telling stories because that's how your emotional, the emotional part of your brain actually processes information, is through narratives. You've got the girl Zawadi, and notice her feet. They point backwards. Now, she was born with feet that point 180 degrees in the wrong direction. She was brought to America from Tanzania and went to this amazing hospital where they do have amazing surgeons and amazing technology. And now you see Zawadi there, the smiling picture, and her feet are pointed in the right direction. And what is Zawadi carrying in those bags that she has in her hand? Those are her first real shoes for normal feet. And let's look. The donor is getting the credit everywhere here. Up next to the masthead name connections, it says, it explains what this newsletter is about, bringing you, the donor, closer to the lives you help change. And then down here, right below Zawadi, remember, your eye will go to the big graphics. So your eye involuntarily goes to look at Zawadi, and right beneath that it says, because of you. And then the big thing on the page, right next to Zawadi's face, so your eye zooms right into it, Zawadi says, thank you. You helped a Tanzanian girl stand tall on her own 2 feet. Well, that's why they get 1,000% improvement in response. Good headlines. What is in a good headline, since we're talking a little bit about headlines now, and we will talk about them some more and then some more again. Headlines, concise, short, specific, you know, Zawadi is a real person, and they include a benefit for the reader. So let's look again at the two front page headlines. What is the distinction between these two? The top headline, the one that got only $5,000 in gift, even though they are showing some patience here, what they are talking about in the headline is, at our hospital, Gillette, medical pioneers are setting the standards for spine care. It is all about how great the hospital is. That is a very important. The first, the old newsletter, is a PR vehicle. It's meant to build the image and reputation of this hospital. Donors do not care because they already accept that you are cool. What they want to see is the result of your work, which is Zawadi with her feet pointing in the right direction, And they want to be the hero, or they will respond if you treat them as the hero. So instead of focusing on how great the staff is, now the newsletter focuses on how great the donor is. And that basic change is what drove their income up 1,000%. Let's take apart some headlines for a moment. Does God like you? You read somewhere. Now, this is a headline proposed by Royal Williams. He just made it up. He's the so-called Wizard of Ads. He's a well-recognized genius in marketing, and people travel to hear this man speak. And he's saying, well, this headline is interesting, and that is a key word there, because first of all, we don't like to talk about God in general situations, because people get a little nervous. Some people are true believers, some people are non-believers. It's just something you don't bring up in mixed company, in a way, and in a public document like a, let's say, newsletter. Plus, it has what is called an involvement device, and that is the question mark. When you ask a question, you can reliably expect a larger percentage of people reading that question to be responsive. They get curious, and that's what the purpose of a question mark is. Another proposed headline from Roy Williams, we're going to be analyzing headlines because they are critically important to newsletters. Why is this one interesting? 4 out of 5 people think the fifth is an idiot. He thinks that's funny. I'm not quite sure. But it is semi-profound. There's something there that I have to think about. And some other reasons. Maybe it made you angry, which is another thing to point out, that bland headlines are not doing you much good. Bland headlines are totally resistible. This kind of headline, which might make some people angry, is much more likely to draw in a reader. And frankly, if people are angry at your stuff and one or two people call and say, oh my God, how dare you do this, then you know you've actually pushed your communications far enough to be getting a response. That's actually a good thing. Let's look at a couple of current headlines. This one is from The Economist magazine, and what makes this an interesting headline? So there are all sorts of things happening here. One is print me a Stradivarius is just a contradiction in expectations. How do you do that? Well, it turns out there's this new 3D printer, this new technology, which takes blueprints and turns them into solid objects, and in this case actually created a violin. It printed it. It just builds it up in layer after layer after layer, very many, 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 many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of micro layers. It builds it up with toner, basically, and you end up, let's say you're a designer, you're an architect or something like that, you've got this blueprint, and then after a few hours of this machine working, you suddenly have this three-dimensional object that you can take to your client and say, here, this is what it's supposed to look like. This is new technology. It's wonderful stuff. It's very intriguing, and it's the cover story on The Economist, which is devoted to business news as much as anything. And the manufacturing technology, and here's the part of the headline that causes people to go, oh, I have to read more, that will change the world. Hold that thought. Put something from your, charity, your area of impact there, the new approach to XYZ that will change the world, so forth and so on. Here's a nonprofit with a very good headline, and this is sent out to donors, and the first thing they see is that this is actually just half of a tabloid-sized front page, is this amazing map of the very state where they live, the state of Rhode Island, and they see one city, the capital city, Providence, has been brought out on the map, and they do see some common, well-known routes like 295 and 95 and so forth, and they're underwater. And the headline, learn to swim, because the sea levels are on the rise and the capital city is going to drown like Atlantis. That will reliably draw in your readers because it's the place they live. It's the place they love. And they give to the Audubon Society because it is enlightened self-interest. The Audubon Society maintains hiking trails and maintains wildlife and saves things and causes things to, you know, not become extinct. And therefore, it's a very relevant story, and it also attaches to today's news because, of course, you look around, what are the things that we are talking about? Well, one of the things we're talking about, I saw it in this morning's news, is rising sea levels. In your newsletter, when I'm beginning with a new client, we're trying to figure out the content. What will we actually put in the newsletter? We use this little grid you see on screen now as a handy kind of cocktail napkin checklist of the things that we need to put in there. The type is different sizes to reflect the different level of importance. Accomplishments, what did you do with my money? How did I, by making a gift to you, change the world? That's the number one thing, so that's big. Offers are the next big thing, and they are there for a couple of reasons. One is because, of course, if it's an offer like a matching gift offer, you might get additional income from it, but they're also there, many times they're offers for just information. They're there to see if anybody's paying attention, because if you put out an offer and nobody responds, it may be because nobody's actually reading your publication. Offers give you a feedback mechanism. The other two things in the smallest type are two things that you work on all the time, but they don't need to take over. They just need to be there, kind of as a steady drumbeat in the background. You need to foment trust in your donors because they don't trust you enough, and they should trust you more. And secondly, you want to build this sense of family, or what marketers call tribe. So your donors are, they're not an amorphous mass of people that you can, you know, you lose some, you can always add some more. They are, the tribe is the collection of your supporters. They are the people you love most in the world. They are the people who are your heroes. They are the people who are doing their work by giving you the money to go out and complete your mission. Okay, so a newsletter is a little bit of a hybrid publication. Recognize that fact. It is not like anything else, a donor newsletter, I mean. It is reporting, but it is not purely so. It is also a birthday card, a get well soon card, a love card, a Valentine's Day card. It is saying to your donor, loud and clear, not buried in the middle of an article, but in the headlines, as we saw with Zawadi, you did it. It's up to you. When you report that way, the donor opens the envelope, pulls out the newsletter, and has a smile on their face as soon as they read the front page. That's the basic goal. You want them to feel something. You don't necessarily want them to think something, because that isn't going to get you anywhere. What you want them to go is, oh, gosh, oh, I love these people. Now, one of the things I have noticed in my review of loads of newsletters is that nonprofits misinterpret the idea of accomplishment. They publish things like what you see on the screen. We have unveiled this new life and job skill resource room, and they think, ah, accomplishment, and the donors will love it. But it only feels like an accomplishment on the inside because as staff, you know that meetings, lots of meetings went into this, budget was spent on this, and you heard the hammering down the hall and all the rest of it, and you're going, yeah, that was a real accomplishment. We look at what we did. That didn't exist before, and now it does. But to the outside world, the donors, the generalists, not specialists like you guys on the inside, they're saying, I don't get it. Why does that matter? You have to translate everything you do into a real accomplishment so that your activities make sense to your donors and they read them properly. What you're looking at is a little report from ICA, International Crisis Aid, out in St. Louis, and they're telling us, well, we bought this house in Cambodia. But that's not the real accomplishment. Yeah, okay, now you have this property, and it's kind of neat looking. Look at all the colors. But what the real accomplishment is what this house represents. Girls as young as 5 years old are being put into prostitution in Cambodia. Just imagine. And ICA, with their donor money, has gone there, bought the house, and now, what I'm pointing to here on the slide, they are rescuing girls from sex trafficking. They are providing these girls with a new life. That's the accomplishment. That's why this house matters. The physical property itself is irrelevant. It is what happens in there changing lives that the donors are contributing to. By the way, numbers are not accomplishments. And again, I see the numbers, service statistics, for instance, flooding charity newsletters. Statistical information, statistical evidence will never, ever create one drop of empathy in the emotional seat of the human brain. What you're looking at here is a very good example. I'm going to give you some research on the next slide which will break this down for you. But you're looking at the bottom half of a newsletter done for the Cape Breton Regional Hospital up in Nova Scotia. And they had this young child. This is not a stock photo. This is a real kid. It is Ava Newman, and she's holding a sign which breaks everybody's heart. I mean, she's such a cute kid, and she's got this expression like, I'm not sure how it's all going to work out, and holding a sign, I need cardiac care. And it's like, oh, my God, help this child. But then right next to this, you have the purple box, and it has a bunch of statistics, more than 250. The numbers are made big, so they're even easier to spot. And 900, and 1,800, and 8,500, and 10,000. And, you know, rationally you think, well, that's going to impress people. They're going to see Ava Newman. They're going to say, well, yeah, and multiply little Ava times one of these numbers, and that's a huge problem, and therefore they need my help. But that's not actually how the mind works, so thinking that is fine, but it's wrong. Here's what the research says. This is Dan Ariely, a professor of psychology at Duke University, and he did some fascinating studies where he tried, first of all, he put in front of people anecdotes. He put in front of them what he calls here a identifiable life. That's science talk for I told you a story and asked for a gift and you gave me 2.38. These are all relative. They're not precise amounts. They're to show you the how much money relatively comes in using different methods of explaining the problem to people. So with an identifiable life, with anecdotal information, he gets 2.38. When he talked about the statistics, when he talked about, you know, the 80 kids, the 200 kids, the 550 kids, exclusively about statistics, the giving fell to less than half. And then, and this is the important part, this reflects back on the front page we just looked at, when he mixed those two together, so you had both anecdotal information and statistical information, you had Ava Newman holding her little sign, but then you had a box of statistics about how many other kids were affected, giving still didn't rise to the 2.38 level, it stayed suppressed. The reason for this is exclusively in the realm of neuroscience. When you introduce statistical information, it moves all the information to a different part of your brain, a part that's kind of in the back and in the middle, instead of the emotional seat, which is up front. And once it's moved out of the emotional seat into the rational area, the brain writes smaller checks. Just be aware of it. And here's some science to back up the very same thing. Okay, so you want to know how many ways can we attack the emotions? And what I have found useful is the Maslow Hierarchy of Needs, which this pyramid you see on screen, it was published in, I think, 1943. And it is an attempt to just kind of profile what we care about at different levels in our life. Now, initially, we care about very basic things like food and water and getting enough sleep and so forth. Then comes the safety things, putting a roof over our head, having medical care, that sort of stuff. Then comes the belonging to other people, you know, having connections to other people. And this is, for instance, one place where charities step in because they talk about our family of supporters. And that is emotionally a satisfying, gratifying concept for people. Esteem is very important at the higher end of Maslow. You cannot, according to Dale Carnegie, convince yourself that you are worthwhile. It actually works much better if other people talk about how wonderful you are. That is far more convincing. And as a fundraiser, that is one of your primary jobs, is to bring to the donor the message over and over that they are extremely wonderful people for providing the money that makes it possible to do this wonderful thing and that wonderful thing, et cetera, et cetera. So as a checklist of ways that you can talk about emotionally significant, emotionally relevant and resonant stuff or put in front of the donor in your newsletter, I use Maslow just because it's kind of all there. What you're looking at is a statement made by an actual donor. Ken Burnett, in his book, The Zen of Fundraising, which is one of his many books, went and talked to donors and said, look, I want you to be as honest with me as you can about your feelings and tell me what it is you expect to get from donors and or from the act of giving. And they said things like this, I want to feel good about giving. This is a verbatim quote from a donor. I want to feel good about it. And so Gillette, in its newsletter for donors, has stories like this, which are designed exclusively to make donors feel good. First of all, it directly addresses the donor. You helped give Grace a voice. Mom hears, I love you, for the first time. Grace had never been able to tell her mother, Mommy, I love you. But thanks to the care and to the technology that she got at Gillette Children's Hospital, now she can say these very basic things to her mom. She can communicate with her mother, and donors tear up when they see these stories. It's so wonderful. They feel great, and if you can make your donors feel great, you have achieved the big secret to success in donor newsletters. You are also selling. the impact that a donor can have on a world that they care about. So let me give you some proof of that. There was an attempt by a charity. They do work in Africa on the health side. They wanted to set up something called a presidential circle, which you can get into if you give them $1,000. And in exchange for this $1,000, you will get, the first time they made this offer, you would get your name stamped into a brick and put into the honor patio, and you'd get a little flag that you could put on your desk, and the flag would be of the country in Africa where your gift was doing its work. And for that, they got two takers. Two people joined the presidential circle. So the Sudis group came in and they said, well, obviously that's not working that well. What is the impact of that $1,000? What does the $1,000 gift actually buy? And the charity said, well, it's pretty amazing actually. You know, with $1,000, we can train somebody in the village, so they're resident there 24 hours a day. They will be the village health care keeper. They will measure and weigh the babies. They will be trained to give inoculations. They will hand out medicines and make sure people keep taking them. They'll pass around anti-malarial nets so that people can sleep without getting bitten and then getting a terrible illness. And in a year, we will have cured 80% of the endemic diseases in that village that are causing adults to not be able to work and kids not to be able to go to school, and that's what your $1,000 buy. You can cure 80% of the things that are wrong medically in that village for a year. And when they made that offer, instead of a brick and a flag, 123 people signed up. So instead of making $2,000, they made $123,000 to put to work in the field. So you sell impact. Another thing donors say, I want to feel involved. I want to be part of something. And if they give to the Children's Mental Health Center in San Antonio, they are part of Vanessa's story of hope. Vanessa was raped repeatedly by her father growing up as a young child, pre-teen, and she started to serially attempt to commit suicide, ended up, fortunately, at the Southwest Mental Health Center, and now you see her, front page of the newsletter, you see her as a college student. Very successful. That's her psychiatrist on the left. That's Vanessa on the right. And every donor gets to share in the happiness, the success, the wonder of seeing somebody come out of a horrible situation and be transformed by the medical care that is donor supported here. You're looking at five different environmental action newsletters, and one of them is much more powerful in terms of forming this sense of I want to be part of something, and it's just because of the name, and that is the one in the middle, The Defender. I want to see myself as a defender. It is emotionally gratifying if I care about this particular cause. Another thing donors say, I want to be inspired. He's headed for Harvard, thanks to you. When this is the first thing you see in your donor newsletter, you pause, you sit down, you start reading, and you find out about David. A rocky childhood, says the deck, left David facing felony charges at just 9 years old. Read his story and discover how your generous support of kid painted a different future for him. That is a message you cannot repeat often enough. This is why donors support you, because they want to feel good about what they've done. Another thing in their head, I want to know how my money will be used, accomplishment reporting, and what difference it will make. So I get my newsletter from International Crisis Aid. We saw them in Cambodia a little earlier. And the newsletter from April has this little sticker they ran through their inkjet printer, and they just put them on, you know, slapped them down on the envelopes that they were sending out to their donors that says, "Hey, Tom, you saved 5,000 Afghans." You have to open the envelope. You want to see how that plays out. You want to see, oh, my God, I my check wasn't that big. How did that work? Here's another one. This is United Way, and they help, you know, untold millions of people in the course of a year across America through this program. And, you know, I read in my donor newsletter that this free tax prep program has brought in legitimate refunds, almost $1 million reclaimed for wallets of local seniors and low-income residents thanks to my United Way support. This is very important. I want to be recognized and valued for my gift. You want to flood your newsletter with donor love. I mean, all four corners, it's just spilling out. From the envelope in that the newsletter is in, it should just have donor love pouring out of it. Just, it gets all over your hands. You actually have to go and clean up afterwards, because this is what donors really feel like. This is the real feeling they get from most charities, that they are, the donor is nothing but a bank machine that somebody goes up, punches some buttons, and cash slides out into their hand. They hate that feeling, and is one of the key reasons, I believe, that they are so quick to jump ship and go to some other charity. You know, bear in mind at all times that the people that are most likely to give you gifts are people that are members of this imaginary society called SONMOP. This is something Mark Phillips in England came up with. The Society for Nice, Middle Class, Older People. And what do they want from you? They want to feel that they have been of some use to the world by making a gift to you. Now, the truth is, most charities do not get this right at all. They get it absolutely, diametrically, 180 degrees wrong. They talk like this. I've seen it all the time. Their tone of voice is, "We did this amazing thing. We did that amazing thing. Oh, by the way, if you happen to have sent a check in, well, thank you very much. We put your name on a list." And there's the list. And this is what donor recognition amounts to at most charities. It's nothing more than a list of names. Hopefully you spelled them right, at least. Now, it's true, donors will look on this list, and if you spell their name wrong, well, that'll be probably the last time you do get a gift from them. But is that true donor recognition? No, it is the, it's necessary. It's far from sufficient. Part of donor recognition is changing the approach in all of your stories, and that's what you saw in the Gillette Children's Hospital that improved giving 1,000%. They started treating all stories this way, that with your help, these amazing things can happen. Just as important, with without your help, they won't. So, in every corner of a newsletter, this is for a tutorial program in an inner city, you have, "I am a VIP success, big smiley face, because of you. Thank you." This is environmental. Your support is essential. Boys and Girls Club, the club needs your help now. And what you're looking at here is some wonderful work by Lisa Sargent and her designer. And this is for a Florida charity. And you're looking actually at the tops of three different pages from the same donor newsletter, same issue. And notice that what the designer did, very smart, she put it in yellow because yellow is a color that it goes into the background. You know, it's not competing with the black type as much for your attention. It's just there kind of quietly radiating the right message. Thank you for caring. We couldn't help them without you. Brighter futures because of you. These repeated statements on every page, in every corner, everywhere you look if you're a donor, remind you of how important you are to this mission. There is another problem that I see all the time, and it is a misunderstanding of what corporate communications are versus donor communications. And corporate communications are a different type of fish than donor communications. Corporate are about raising people's opinion of you. It is image and reputation. Donor communications are about telling the donor how wonderful they are. And they are easily characterized by simply two pronouns. In corporate communications, the characteristic pronoun you will see over and over and over is we or any of its variations. In donor communications, on the other hand, the most important word is the pronoun you. In fact, sidebar, in marketing, the most important word of all is the word you. Now, I've taken a little snippet here. What you see on screen is a little snippet from a report from Amnesty International. Had it been done as corporate communications, it would have read, I feel very fortunate because in my travels I am able to meet the people that Amnesty has helped. But it wasn't done that way. It was written by Sean Triner at Pareto down in Australia, and he's one of the world's best copywriters. So he did it the right way. Donor communications simply changed that word. I feel very fortunate because in my travels I am able to meet the people that you have helped. And that one word substitution makes volumes of difference in your income. You're looking at an e-newsletter from one of my clients, Save the Children, and I torture them because they don't get this right no matter how much I bang on them. First of all, dear Thomas, they never asked me how I wish to be addressed, so they're addressing me by the name that is in the record file. I don't actually ever go by the name Thomas. It's always been Tom. It has been Tom since I was a child. And so they got that wrong, and now I can hear the computer whirring in the background, dear Thomas. And the first thing, and it's in bold, and it's centered, and it's got white space around it, is every 4 seconds, a child life is saved by me? No, by us, by a Save the Children health worker. Did I help pay for them? Well, maybe, I don't know, we're not talking about that right now. We're talking about ourselves. As we see again, what's the big graphic on the page? It's baby Aisha, the photo. And cunningly shot so that I see the Save the Children logo in the background of her, whatever, wherever she's lying down sleeping. And it says, every 4 seconds, a child like baby Aisha is saved by me, the donor? No, by us, Save the Children health workers. Did I help bring them there? Well, we're not talking about that. We're talking about ourselves. And that is that persistent desire to talk about yourselves is killing your income. So you get yourself one of these high-tech editing devices, the big red pen, whoops, and you go through your stuff and you circle every instance where the word you has appeared in your publication, because that's a good thing to do. Now what you're looking at is the donor newsletter from one of the world's largest charities, Catholic Relief Services, down in Baltimore. And I had the unpleasant slash pleasant task of going to them and training them and saying, hey, by the way, your donor newsletter utterly fails the you test. It doesn't use the word you at all. And there you go. Fails the you test. Every place you see a red X, there should have been the word you. The you gets scattered all over the place because we don't really know where they will start reading. Sometimes they start in the middle. Sometimes, actually fairly predictably, they'll start in the big type because it is bigger graphically. Here we've passed the you test. Dear believer in the kids of Pawtucket, your newsletter is inside. If you had to choose between paying your bills and feeding your children, what would you do? We ask a question, an involvement device, and we use the word you four times. That will draw people irresistibly into this story. You look for opportunities to insert more you content. When you're calling out our five-year plan, you better get the donor into that somehow. Because otherwise, it's about you, and it's not about them, and so their interest is fairly light. After all, they are not staff members. So our five-year plan and your role in it is far more engaging. Contribute now, and you will help break the cycle of child abuse is far more personal and engaging. Our programs in Pennsylvania, no. That puts me on the outside. It should say something like, your gifts help support these wonderful programs in Pennsylvania. And how much is the personal pronoun actually worth? We will return to Gillette and the original Gillette newsletter that did so meagerly with donors, failed the U test utterly. The one that passes it with screaming colors, Zawadi says, thank you, has 1,000% improvement in income. That's how much that simple pronoun is worth. I describe donor centricity, this feeling that you must love the donor at all costs, at all times, as a warm soak in a flattery bath. That just is an image I can relate to. You take the donor and you keep dipping them into this warm flattery bath until they're dripping with flattery. But some people hear the word flattery and think negative things, so we don't want to make this impossible for you to put to work. Difference between appreciation and flattery. Well, flattery, according to Dale Carnegie, is from the lips out. Appreciation is heartfelt. Well, you are pumping out heartfelt appreciation. So let's call it a warm soak in an appreciation bath. And here's an example. These are the first words spoken by Ken Hackett, president of Catholic Relief Services, when you go to their website and you click on their 2009 interactive annual report. This guy pops up into your screen and he starts talking, and the first statements, hello, he introduces himself, welcome, that's important, the generosity of you, our donors, is one of our greatest blessings. Your support gives us the resources we need to bring innovative solutions to tough problems. Your compassion transforms lives. Well, there's plenty of we in there too, but the we is subordinated to the you, and that is the critical point. You, you, you. I have mentioned, they're not reading the articles. Don't expect them to. Won't happen, not in this lifetime. Here's research. Newspaper, the research arm of the newspaper industry is called the Poynter Institute, and this is fairly recent research from the Poynter Institute, and they're looking at people as they read newspapers and seeing what they actually look at. You know, they have cameras trained on their eyes. And what they found is, predictably enough, that they look at the photos and the artwork mostly, because those are the big graphics, and we know the brain just cannot resist. They look at headlines more than half the time. Again, headlines are bigger. The brain cannot resist, and headlines are reader conveniences. They tell me what's in the story, so I don't have to read the story. Briefs are the little sidebar things, and they're brief and short, so they get a little more attention than usual. Captions, again, they're adjacent to photos. They get a little more attention. The least amount of attention is given to the text, and actually the 25% is assumed to be a fairly, perhaps a high number, a little distorted by the research. So you can assume that it probably 1 out of 5 at most of your quote-unquote readers are actually reading any part of an article, and usually they don't go much further than a paragraph or two. So if you're putting stuff at the end of articles, if you're saying, oh, we love our donors, and that's like in paragraph 5, nobody heard that. So you're seeing, again, Catholic Relief Services, their donor newsletter, and I've put a heart in all the high visibility locations, the places where in a rewrite they would stick in the donor, because those are the places which all the research and eye motion studies tell us are the most likely to be read. We are browsers, we are skimmers. We are not deep readers, and particularly not deep readers of stuff written by charities, most of whom who do not have professional journalists on staff, i.e. they do not have anybody who's trained to entertain the readers. Most of what they churn out is pretty dry stuff. Not that appealing. Eye motion studies just told us that I will look at the big graphics, so I'll look at the photo, and I'll see the big check, and I'll think, oh, you've already got all the money you need. You guess you don't need me this time. That's what these big check photos actually translate into. When you're writing your newsletter, you're writing at 1 mile an hour. When you're a reader, so-called, you're reading, quote-unquote, at 100 miles an hour, you're really skimming. So you're picking up impressions, and they're probably often wrong impressions, but they are your impressions. And this big check thing, which is meant to honor the one donor that gave the money, is actually turning off the other donors because it says, we don't really need you at this point in time. So here's a little fragment of a charity newsletter. People will look at the photo, so they see the guy. He's on crutches. Everybody will look at that. About a third of them read the caption. Fortunately, the caption says something about Operation Homefront, and then nobody reads the article. So if this is the world you have to live in, what is the best thing for you to do? Well, the best thing is to fix what is a serious fatal flaw in most donor newsletters, and that is the weakness of their headlines. They actually are either not headlines at all because they don't perform the basic function of headlines, or they're some sort of, you know, almost headline that I'm still guessing at. Now, let me ask, because we're a little past halfway, and this is exhausting, I'm sure, just to sit there and listen to me yap, do we have some questions? And Pam, if you're there, maybe you could come back on.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Questions? Yep.
I sound like I've got an echo here. Do we have some questions? I'm not seeing any right now.
Okay, I'll just keep going, and then we'll, you know, at the end, if people have thought of a question or something confuses them or there's something they want to explore, perhaps we can, you know, wrap it up with questioning.
That sounds good.
Okay.
I had just one quick question that, while we were going through, and that's, do you ever recommend using stock photos?
Yeah, you can use them. Yes, I use them myself with my clients all the time. Sometimes because the stock photography you can buy today is often generated by some of the best photographers who are working. Most commercial photographers now created a second income by selling outtakes or selling kind of generic photos. You know, to the market. So there's great stock photography. It used to be kind of second rate, but that's years out of date. Now you can get incredible stuff. Secondly, sometimes with privacy issues, you can't show real people, and so you want in order to show somebody that is similar, you know, has the same demographic, the same age, the same skin color, the same whatever. Mm-hmm. You will use a stock photo where there's a signed release, and so you don't have to worry about somebody saying, hey, what did you do? Those are good reasons to use stock. Stock may be available when you don't have anything else. I mean, photography is much more important, I think, than people quite realize if they're not professional communicators. Mm-hmm. There is a statistic I saw recently quoted in the New York Times that the average Westerner adult these days sees more images in one day than a Victorian would have seen in his entire life. And so we are highly sophisticated visually, even if we don't think we know anything about it. We're exposed to so much visual imagery that we really are discriminating, and boring stuff just doesn't work unless, as we saw with the people in Ireland, they were using boring photography, but it had the value, let's say, of being authentic. It was the real people being held. We just couldn't see their faces. So let me continue on with this, because actually this is pivotal. If you aren't getting headlines right, then nothing else will work for you in a newsletter. Another point to make just in passing is that the equivalent of a headline for an e-newsletter is the subject line, where you have somewhere like 40 to 50 characters, and what you put, what you say in those 40 to 50 characters is all that will determine whether somebody opens your e-newsletter and reads any further or not. So it better be good and have a hook in it, or more people than necessary will just ignore it. Okay, what you're looking at, I see this all the time. This is not a headline, even though it stands in the correct position. It is big type, and it is above the article, which is where headlines appear. They introduce the articles, but it's nothing but big type. It's really big type. It does not perform the journalistic function which headlines must perform in order to be of any use to the reader. The function is this: to summarize the gist of the story. That's why headlines exist. I go through 4, 5, sometimes 6 newspapers a day, and yet that doesn't take me 24 hours. It takes me no more than half an hour. And the reason is because they're all professionally written, and they all have functional headlines, and those headlines are telling me, summarizing for me, what the gist of the story is, so that I can make an intelligent on-the-fly decision whether or not to pay any further attention. if you don't write that kind of headline, then people tend to wander off with scratching their head and wondering. From the development department, thanks for the warning, but it is not a headline. This is Save the Children. This is one of the first things they sent me when I became their kind of communications consultant. We're trying to tune things up there. And they said, well, what do you think? This is their donor newsletter. In fact, it's their donor newsletter for major donors. It was at that time. Change for Children. You can help us do more. Okay, so I'm scratching my head because this does not pass the basic test. What is this story actually about? Well, as it turns out, in the first paragraph, they blow your brain up, but you'd never know. What they're actually announcing here is a campaign to double the number of children being served by Save the Children and its donors to something like 74 million kids. An amazing stretch goal for a charity. Now, that is what should be in the headline, because that brings me in instead of this bland pablum. I use this one a lot. This is from the Leahy Clinic up in Boston, and it was in their donor newsletter, and it shows this lovely couple, and they're golfing, clearly, and you have a headline that says, World Travelers Come Home to Receive World-Class Care. So everything in that headline seems like a clue about what the story's about. And I have asked thousands of people now, well, tell me, you know, there's the headline, there's the photo. Those are the two big graphics. Your eyes go right to them. And so what do you think this is about? And the consensus has been pretty much, well, they were on a golf trip, I guess, overseas, because it says World Travelers. And they must have gotten sick, because then they came home to receive world-class care. So maybe they were golfing someplace that didn't have very good health care. Perfectly reasonable assumption based on what is shown to you. The truth is, though, the article is about charitable remainder uni trusts, which are a type of plan giving instrument that might be, in fact, of some interest to the more than 100,000 donors that are on the mailing list for the Leahy Clinic, but they would never know that that's what the story is about, because the headline sends them off in a different direction. So, here's the test. You take your big fat hand like me. This is actually my hand in life size. And you put it over the article so you can only read the headlines. And you're looking at the front page of the Wall Street Journal. You can tell what this story is pretty much about. And that is the basic test for, does a headline work or does it not work? If you cannot tell by putting your hand over the story and having some stranger read this headline and say, oh yeah, well I guess that story's about this, that, and the other thing, and they get it right, then you have to go back and rewrite that headline. Here's an example of one that didn't work. This is the Houston Grand Opera. We are developing a donor newsletter there, and this was one of their first attempts. And what are they spouting back to the prospective reader? They are spouting back their internal jargon. HGOCO is one of their program names. Nobody cares about these crazy names you come up with your programs. Not the donors, maybe the funders might. Company, community, collaboration. Well, okie dokie, whether that's alliteration or the other one that is vowels, I don't know. It's, you know, it's just a bunch of words thrown together by program people, but they mean nothing to your average reader. It's internal talk. You cannot take your internal talk on a walk out on the street. Nobody understands it. They don't care about it. They're not interested in it. It has no resonance for them. It's just inappropriate for a non-specialist outsider audience. Here are a couple of before and afters for you to look at in the leisure time. On the left is what they originally intended to say, and on the right is the rewrite. So, for instance, the Opera Ball 2011, My Fair Ladies, wouldn't it be lovely to raise $1 million? Well, you know, there's some virtues to that. They have a question there, and it's kind of funny to read, wouldn't it be lovely, which is from the song. But it doesn't get to the point. The point is, this is an offer. This is about inviting you, the major word, the most important word, to come to this ball. It is an invitation. And instead of burying that invitation at the end of an article, even though put in bold face to purchase tickets or to donate, we, in the second iteration, pulled it up, put a box around it, put a pink tint behind it, made it bigger, made it splashy, turned it into its own little ad. And that's how you get people to notice these offers. You can go wild in a newsletter. Being safe is not the smart thing to do. And here's a good example. This is a wonderful piece that was done by an environmental charity up in Canada. And they took a risk. And they wrote as if, in this case, it was an appeal letter, but it could have been a newsletter, as if it were written by a ruby-throated hummingbird. And here you see a shot of me taken just before we left Mexico. It's my good side. And then in here we have a map that shows where the ruby-throated hummingbird went. It went and it rested on an oil platform on the migration route, and all sorts of wonderful, counterintuitive, surprising things we learned. This entertains me. Here's Lilu. She is in a newsletter for an animal shelter. Hey, and she's talking to the reader. Lilu, hey, y'all, I'm easy, breezy, and beautiful. If you're looking for kitty kisses, I'm the girl for you. I don't like to share, so I prefer home where I can have my people all to myself. I'm a talker, so you can tell me your story. I will tell you mine. Very entertaining stuff. They probably cloned this cat and had it adopted 1,000 times by now. Again, neuroscience. Why? Because it's just your brain trying to persuade my brain. So the more we know about how brains respond and react and work, the more successful we will be in that endeavor of persuasion. And neuroscience said this. It was quoted in the Wall Street Journal in 2008. This is pretty recent. When we come across new information, that information triggers a chemical reaction that makes us feel good. And we try to get more new information because we like the feeling. There is something reliably that you can do with your readers, is put surprising stuff in front of them. A claim for the world's premiere of the first ever mariachi opera. Oh my God, who's ever heard of such a thing? In fact, it's even simpler than you might realize, because even the word new is extraordinarily powerful and attractive and causes people to pay more attention. So this is a little item from a Planned Parenthood newsletter. Where you can see we've used many words. Some are exactly the word new. We have this chic new condom brand. We have a new fashion statement. We have something new, the new condom. I've circled them. But you also have words that suggest new, like launches and released and so forth. Anytime you can get stuff in that is new or new-ish, it is a good thing. The most highly paid journalists in America are the people that write the headlines for tabloid newspapers that you see by the checkout counters in supermarkets. Those people get paid like Hollywood scriptwriters, because those publishers know that the headlines are what cause people to read that stuff. So you'll see words like secret and unveiled and revealed, and but even more pedestrian stuff like did you know columns and frequently asked questions or this one, myths and truths, will cause people reliably to pay more attention to you. Make lists, because lists are very popular in headlines. I'm just giving you a few tips here. Like the top three kinds of help military moms on the home front need most. Or connect with today's news, because I'm already into it. What did Charlie Sheen do today? How is he in Libya? Is he curing global warming with the freeze effect on his audience? You know, it would just plug into whatever else is out there, because they're already paying attention to that. Inside this envelope, if you put this on the outside of your donor newsletter, on that envelope that is the carrier for that newsletter, you put there something that says, one of our community's darkest secrets, I guarantee you that most people will open that envelope. They can't really resist. They have to find out what the secret is. Now, while newsletters are not primarily sales vehicles, because they are there mostly to make me feel good as a donor, they can sell a little, and I mentioned that offers are how you do this, because you want to get a response that you can track. If you are sending out an e-newsletter, which of course you should be, know this, that the online environment is far different than the print environment. It is utterly action-oriented. It is so interesting to watch people interact with a new website in a test environment, because all they do is click on things to see what will happen. It's a totally safe environment. They don't expect, you know, something like the thing will blow up. They're just clicking, oh, look, video, I'll click on it and see what. That's why in the e-newsletter you keep the writing to a minimum, and you keep, as it says here, bullet number two, you give them 3 to 5 actions to take. A very good kind of offer is a tour of any kind. Now, here we have the advantage of exotic, wonderful, beautiful animals being treated like, in a way, like, you know, royal princesses. They get better health care than you and I do. But you take somebody on a tour like this, and what the advantage is they are going to step in things, they're going to smell things, they're going to hear things, they're going to feel things, and because of that, those create what are called sense memories, and sense memories last a lifetime, unlike intellectual memories, for instance, studying for a test, and then the day after the test, you can't remember what any of the answers are. Sense memories never go away, and that's one of the huge advantages of making the offer to make a tour. Now, do not bury your offer. I've brought this up before, and let me give you the poster child for, you know, the proof. What you're looking at is an insert that went into a newspaper. It went into 250,000, a quarter million households. And at the end of the article, it says, as they is often the case, for more information, call Dottie Weston Murphy. So I called Dottie, and I said, hey, Dottie, you sent out 250,000 of these, quarter million. It cost you $10,000 to do this insert. So how many people called? You must have been swamped. Zero. Nobody called. And that's what happens when you put these stupid little offers, excuse my language, at the end of an article for more information. They simply do not work. You have to treat all your offers as little ads. Make them pop. Make them bigger. Make them easy to find, as this newsletter does here. You know, oh, it's free, it's new. Those are two very important words in marketing. And it's yours, another important word, for the asking. And then you give them three different ways they can get their free copy, and you show the free copy. I mean, it's just information, but you turn it into a physical thing, and you don't bury it at the end of an article. Here's another good example. Again, we've seen this newsletter before. Brighter futures because of you. Here's our challenge grant. We put a dotted coupon box around it. Why? Because we know again, from research, that if you put a dotted coupon box around anything, even if it is not a coupon, it will have 20% more readership than stuff without dotted coupon boxes around them. Inertia, I believe, is what is the biggest enemy of fundraising, i.e. getting people to actually do stuff on your behalf is extraordinarily difficult. It's much easier to just sit there and do nothing. And that's why matching gift offers are so helpful in causing people to say, oh, you know, I like these people. I know I'm going to give them a gift. Hey, look, this is the number 10 envelope on the outside of a newsletter. It says every gift multiplies 20 times. Oh boy, this is the time. I should do this. I shouldn't wait until they ask again. If I send in my $10 now, it becomes $200 of impact. Maybe I should bump it up to $100. That would give me $2,000 of impact. I may be feeding an entire village for a month somewhere. That's what offers do. They get people who otherwise might stay inert and get them to act now. Here's a footer you can adjust and adapt for your e-newsletter. Greenpeace relies almost entirely on the support of individuals. This is very important. We have given the entire responsibility for the Greenpeace movement to the donors. Why? Because that allows Greenpeace to remain independent of any influence from government or corporate money. Important, important, important for them to do their actions and their influencing without being compromised. So please donate now. Now this is in a newsletter, so you can just click on donate now. It takes you immediately to a page which is dedicated to, hey, thanks for coming from the newsletter. We appreciate your taking the time. It, you know, it completes the action by recognizing where you have come in from. Please donate now, and if you can, because it is recognized that in the times we live in, with very bad economic conditions still all over the world, a lot of uncertainty, people giving is way down. It is way down all over the country in the United States. So you acknowledge that and make it special that people are giving to you. Emotions rule. Here are the seven top emotional triggers according to the direct mail industry. This is the consensus. Consensus reached through trillions of dollars of testing. That's literal. That's not an exaggeration. And decades and decades of testing. Anger, exclusivity, fear, flattery, greed, guilt, and salvation. They're all powerful. Now, they're listed alphabetically. I would say that of them, you know, you choose and you situationally which one is going to work for me. And you look at the thing you're about to put out in the mail as your newsletter, and you say, which of these emotional triggers does this stimulate? They can be good emotional triggers, that is positive, and I'll show you positive ones in a second, or they can be the bad ones, the negative, the fear, the anger. Those are very important to moving gifts in your direction. We now know, again, neuroscience, that negative raises more money than positive. Whether you like that or not, that is the situation. That is the brain environment you work in. And so you're looking at an offer being made by a charity. Now, this charity had a wonderful thing happen to them. One of the a well-known novelist in the UK, a guy named Nick Hornby, came to them and said, you know, I have minor characters in all my novels. I write about one a year or every 2 years maybe. And I'm happy, because I believe in you guys, to name one of these characters, one of these minor characters, after somebody who has, you know, won an auction, the immortality auction. And six other novelists came forward and said, we'll do the same thing. We'll name a minor character. So we, you know, a donor to this auction can be now in a published novel that you know, quote unquote, will be immortal. What are the emotional triggers? Exclusivity, not many people get this opportunity. Greed, I really want it. I want to be that famous person. I want to be a minor character. I want to be in a novel. Flattery, all of these things happen. And these are the things that cause, these emotional triggers are what fire me to do something. Now, here are the five positives that Mal Warwick depends on heavily in his work, Mal being one of the top copywriters for fundraising in the world. Hope, love, compassion, duty, faith, these work like a seesaw with the negative. So if you introduce anger and fear, you better give me some hope that we can do something about it. Otherwise, I'm just disturbed and I get no resolution. The gift actually comes in because you are promising resolution to the fear and the anger. Say Adrian Sargent again, top researcher. What is one of his key principles? Why people stay loyal to a charity? Why donors stick with you? Because, he says, these are his words, they are aware of consequences. They know somewhere in their minds that if they do not give you a gift, someone may be hurt. Someone, let's say the food bank, would not be able to get the meal they needed to feed their kids. And that, it may be a very minor tickle, but it is a tickle. And it says, you know what, I've ignored the last three times that they have asked me to contribute. I better contribute this time because I just think they're going to need me. Here's Weighed Down and Weary. This is a newsletter from the UK. It is done by a top house, but they use the domain formula that I introduced you to earlier, the four-pager. And this is the insides, page 2 and 3. And look at what is happening here. First, not a lot of words. Things to look at. You have the sidebar, the map, which shows the Mali, and that's where the work is being done. And what is the work? Well, the donors to this charity are giving money in order for draft animals like this donkey here to be helped. They are animal rights people. They care about animals. And these beasts of burden, so-called, you know, they're in very poor countries. Often there isn't much motorized, there isn't much in the way of motorized transportation. So they're using animals like donkeys and so forth. And they are treated very, very rough. And this charity goes in and it rescues them, and it brings them to compounds where they are treated well and given health care and fed well, and you know, and they take them out of this bad life. And you can see, and they show the donor what happens. These poor animals, their ribs are sticking out, they're not well fed, they fall down, they're beaten, and they have to get up again and try again, and they're just, you know, weighed down and weary. And then it tells you what you can do today, and it thanks you right away in big type. So what you just saw is another of Adrian Sargent's principles of why donors stay loyal, which is, of course, why we are sending them the newsletter in the first place, because they are learning as they go. Every issue of the newsletter teaches them something. And he talks about it this way: take your donors on a journey. So do issues. How are we going to take on a journey in this issue? As you could see here from the orangutan people, we're taking them on a journey. We take our donors to a place they probably will never, ever personally get to, the jungles of Borneo. And we show the villagers who have enrolled and enlisted to help these baby orangutans be taken care of rather than to be hunted down. And we show them sleeping in a nursery with the orangutans. This is taking your donor on a journey. And that's all I have to tell you today. If you'd like to subscribe to a free how-to e-newsletter, just go to my website. The address is on your screen. Pam?
I'm here.
Any questions?
We did have some questions. Let me see. I'm sure you've heard this one several times. Do you recommend a From the Director article?
Thank you for giving me a chance to rant. they're okay. They don't do much for you, but they are okay as long as they're not on the front page. There are two things I want to tell you. First of all, I was shocked when the first book I wrote was about donor newsletters, and you know I was basically just repeating what I had learned from the domain people, and I was fleshing that out with examples, and I had at one point about 60 to 70 donor newsletters spread out, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing, because three-quarters of them had a letter from the executive director as the front page news. And to me, that was, you know, I had been a reporter, and I thought, well, my God, if I could pick one thing that would be the most boring thing I could think of to put on in a newsletter, it'd be the letter from the executive director. After all, they'll never bring up anything controversial. They'll always be talking about how wonderful everything is and how great their organization is. And it's happy talk usually. Again, there are exceptions, and I've run across them, but rare exceptions. Mostly, it's junk. And that was one problem. You don't put boring happy talk on your front cover, because you very quickly train your donors to totally ignore you, and so you move it off the front page. The second thing I've noticed is that they usually have no headline. They just say from the desk of the director, or a message from the CEO, or something like that. That is not a headline. That's just a department label. And you have to put a real headline on it, or it is, it's deaf, dumb, and blind. So, move it off the front page. Make it as short as you can possibly make it. Stick a headline on it. Add some zing to it, because the only way you're going to get anybody to read those things is to be entertaining somehow. They're not going to read it because you're the executive director. Frankly, that's a red flag to go find something else to do with your time. So that's my answer.
It's a good answer. And another question that came in is, does a reply envelope need to be included in every newsletter?
Yes, if you want people to send checks back. I mean, it's a convenience. Now, will they always use it? No. They, if you have online giving as an option, they will often resort to that because it's easy and fast. And some people these days are actually getting out of the habit of writing checks. But do recall always that your donors tend to be far older than the average population, the average age of donors still, and there is a good reason for this, is over 60. So they probably still very much are in the habit of writing checks. Mm-hmm. And so that's no big inconvenience for them. But what we're finding now, and this is very interesting, I think, we're finding this out through direct mail appeals, is that people will get a physical appeal in the mail, and they will make a gift, but they will go online to make a gift. Now, maybe you might assume that from that point on, therefore, they would be habituated to going online to give, and therefore you'd always remind them through electronic means. But actually, the research shows just the opposite, that it is the physical appearance, not appearance, the look of, but the fact that a piece of mail has come in that triggers the online gift. So if you wait for them to give, again, without sending the direct mail, they don't. It is the mail itself that triggers the online gift.
Ah. I got another question in about, I'm not sure I quite understand this. I was wondering what Tom thought about print newsletters for environmental groups aimed at reforestation or saving rainforests, or whose mission
Oh,
is...
I think I... Yeah, I'm going to guess at what that means. In other words, is it a contradiction in terms if you're an environmental group to be sending paper? You know, if you're... I did something. Let me go back.
Gotcha.
Okay. It's a great day in the digital frontier here. What I would suggest is, in order to keep the paper, if let's say, first of all, if you wanted to keep the paper, let's say that you looked at some of the research, you saw that the paper experience is different than the electronic experience, you want to retain the paper experience, I would say go find a paper that's made out of sustainable forestry and make that a big point, because actually that confirms to your loyal readers that you're conscientious and thoughtful about this. So somewhere easy to find, it has maybe a little symbol for recycling or something, but it also says out loud, maybe on every page even, this newsletter is printed on 100% renewable paper made for 100% renewable trees or something like that, just because that's appropriate for your donor base. Now, you might say, well, look, maybe we're the exception to the rule. Maybe we should just simply not have a paper newsletter, in which case, make it clear to your donors that they're not going to get this, and therefore you rely on them to be more responsive than the average to electronic media, because the opening rates for electronic newsletters are really not high. They're 10% or less. So 90% or more are ignoring what you send. In order to get past that problem, well, first of all, you have to write really exciting subject lines. Those are your e-news headlines. But secondly, and that takes testing. Incidentally, it is a very much in progress thing. Nobody knows, and it is different for every cause. What works and what doesn't work. But anyway, so if you've got to go all electronic because you feel it is part of your mission, make sure they understand that you rely heavily on them to be responsive to these electronic messages you're sending out. Anything else, Pam?
What would be considered a good open rate for e-news?
Well, a good open rate, it depends. I mean, you're looking on screen now at the invitation to subscribe to my e-newsletter. My e-newsletter is very practical. It has built its audience over time. It is often people are referred to it by other people who found it useful. It is meant to be useful. It's meant for practitioners, and it's filled with tips and so forth. Well, my opening rate tends to be above 30%. So it is maybe 33%, 34%, something like that. That is unusually high. The industry standards that are tracked by Constant Contact, which is the service I use, says that typically a newsletter from a firm, a consulting firm like mine, might have an opening rate of 10%. Charities have an opening rate of 10% or under. If you're doing better than that, that's a good sign. That's a good sign that what you're sending out is interesting, exciting, meaningful, relevant. The people that get it are happy with the product, they are, you know, pleased, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's a medium we mostly ignore because we get too much of it. I mean, I'm throwing away, even with all my spam filters engaged, I'm still throwing away spam every day. I'm still throwing away, and I'm reading 5 or 6 blogs a day, and so is everybody else. And, you know, it is, it's a busy little world we live in these days.
Ditto, ditto. Well, I appreciate you being here today. And I've gotten a lot of great feedback from the people who have attended, and I thank you so much for joining.
Well, thank you all for spending time with me too. You know, it's not necessarily easy to just sit in front of a computer and listen to somebody. So thank you for participating.
We've gotten some great feedback. Thanks so much, Tom.
Okay, Pam. Take care, everyone.
You too. Bye-bye.